Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. We've dressed over 20,000 wedding parties, and most of our business comes from referrals. Why? Because we make it so easy. Tight timeline? No problem. Groomsmen scattered all over? We got you. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Come see me at Nick's Menswear, and let's make this the easiest win for your wedding planning. Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Collars here. We all know what's taking place Sunday night. Maybe the two best teams in football. Who knows? Two teams going for a 15-win season. Two teams 14-2. The winner gets the number one seed. The loser gets the fifth seed. The winner gets a break. The loser's playing on the road days later. So Matthew is here to enlighten us about a highly, highly, highly anticipated game. Hello, sir. Good to chat. As always, the Lions are leading the league. They average 33.8 points a game. So they're basically 34 points a game. It's pretty stunning. When they are slowed, what happens? What doesn't work where Detroit isn't scoring almost every drive?
I'll have to let you know when that happens. They have been truly one of the best offenses I think we've seen in the last 10 years. And for a team to be able to lose the defensive players that they had and overcome that the way that they have. And even when you look at that Buffalo game, we all thought, oh, it's over. Buffalo's up by a couple scores and Detroit just keeps going and going. And San Francisco gets ahead on them. And you think, okay, well, it's a meaningless game, whatever. And they just put the gas pedal down and continue to score and score. I don't know that there is any actual weakness that you can identify since Jameson Williams has emerged as one of their best players. Midway through the season, he was still looking like kind of a bust draft pick. Remember, they traded up with the Vikings in that deal, and Williams had produced very little for that. It was looking like one of their bad moves, their very rare bad moves in the draft. And then all of a sudden, he comes alive, and he's averaging 4.5 catches with 70-something yards per game since then. So he's become a factor. So you can't even say, oh, well, if you take St. Brown out of the game, that you can slow them down a little bit. David Montgomery goes down. That might actually be better for them since Gibbs is a better player, that they won't put in the worst running back. Not that Montgomery is bad, but Gibbs is just significantly better. So they're strong there. Their offensive line is healthy. They've really got everything. One detail is that Jared Goff, always and forever, is not the most mobile quarterback. He's even been better inside the pocket this year. But under pressure, PFF still has him as the 22nd ranked quarterback as far as his grade goes. And you can get to him a little bit and you can throw him off a little bit. He doesn't make huge mistakes, but you can at least slow them down for a play or two if you can get after him. So that will be a major, major focus for Brian Flores, making sure that Jared Goff doesn't sit back there and pick him apart.
It's really a stunning contrast when you look at the health of the two defenses. You know, where the Vikings now will have Cashman, They did not have Cashman. They've got some other guys who are kind of on the edge of starters or reserves, or you're kind of up in the air on. But they're extraordinarily healthy defensively, and the Lions are still without player after player after player. So, two-part question. How much impact will Cashman have on this game compared to his absence? And where are the Lions missing their key players the most? Obviously, Hutchinson is the biggest name. But where are the, is it just him? Is the pass rush? What has stood out the most with all those losses?
It is two places that really impact this game. Alaim McNeil, their defensive tackle, was a guy that just gave fits to the interior of the Vikings every time he played against them. We know this, always and forever. If the other team has a great defensive tackle who can rush the passer, it's going to be a problem for the Vikings O-line, but now he's out, and he was their best guy at that. The other one is Carlton Davis, who I am convinced the Detroit Lions went out and signed to go against Justin Jefferson because he was big. He's a great man coverage corner, key part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for years. And he played pretty well in that first matchup. Well, they are going to be without him. So now you're down to mostly backup cornerbacks there going against Jefferson, Addison, and on a defense that likes to play a lot of man coverage. Well, guess what? Justin Jefferson mm-hmm. is at his absolute best.
Right.
And to your question about Blake Cashman, there's no number I can give you or stat or analytic that really describes how important Blake Cashman is. This is a guy who makes all the changes at the line of scrimmage. He's also somebody that, and it's a subtle thing, but he's so good at getting into a gap, like getting downhill so quickly against the run and just redirecting a running back. You saw this last week several times where he doesn't even make the tackle, but he's in the spot. And then Josh Jacobs has to try to go somewhere else because he knows that Blake Cashman's going to tackle him. So he tries to go some other way, and then they collapse on him, and everyone else is able to rally. So having him as a run defender, I think he's one of the 10 or 12 best run defenders at his position in the league. So you talk about the leadership element, the communication element, and then also just as a player, the other thing he does too, because he does honestly everything really well and could have been a Pro Bowler. I think if they had wanted to make him that, it would have been very fair, is that he's really good at coverage over the middle of the field. We saw that against San Francisco, I thought was probably his best game early in the season, where they tried to work the middle of the field to George Kittle, to their running backs, to the guys going over the middle, and Blake Cashman was a monster on those plays. Well, there's a lot of that same stuff that Ben Johnson uses over the middle of the field, and Cashman is a huge element of it. I think if you're looking for a why will it be different this time, his presence is definitely one of the reasons you would use.
If you had, and there are many contenders, and we just talked about one of them, but if you had to pick out the Vikings' best defensive player this year, who is it?
I think it's between, oh gosh, I mean, it's really between all the guys they brought in, right?
Yeah, like, that's it.
I mean,
those three.
Cashman has a very unique value to him. He also had 4.5 sacks this year, which is, you know, a really good contribution as a blitzer. Van Ginkle, I think we've seen him develop as a pure edge rusher who could just beat tackles. And I never actually thought of him that way coming in here. He was kind of like a dynamic move around type of player. But then we saw that from him last week, especially in a key down, just racing by a tackle. But it's hard not to pick Jonathan Greenard. I mean, I think Jonathan Greenard has a really good case for even being in the defensive MVP conversation. He's second in the entire league in quarterback pressures. And he's also been the game changer, the closer, that when you're late in a game and this guy's been rushing the passer all day, you know that he's going to be able to come through. And then the other thing about Greenard that people don't recognize is how unselfish he is. Last week, Cashman got a sack. I think it was Van Ginkle and Cashman both kind of combined for a sack, where Greenard lined up on the inside and took the guard about 7 yards out of the way so Cashman could have room to go in and get the quarterback hit. I mean, stuff like that, not everybody does. Dropping back in coverage, not everybody does. Greenard has been a total game changer. And as much as Danielle Hunter deserves all the flowers and they you know, could put him in the Ring of Honor, and I wouldn't argue for a second.
And by the way, Greenard, he's had a very good year for the Texans, right?
Absolutely. Greenard was a better fit. He was a little bit of a better fit. And that move right there, that decision, saved him $7 or $8 million and found a guy that I think Flores has really made the most of.
Let's take a pause. Come back with Matthew again. The Major Garrett opens somehow fires out of nowhere. I'm now convinced that Major has a button, that he has control of the board. Major is going to join us in 15 minutes or so. We'll talk about the new speaker. Let's just try to get Matthew to pin down the impact on this game. How much of an advantage it is for either team to win this game? Just to try to quantify that in some way. Mr. Purple Insider, check it out. PurpleInsider.football. The mailbag, looking at Sam Darnold, previewing the Lions. Just great stuff all week on the most hyped regular season game in a long, long time in Vikings history as two teams are playing great, great football. Two of the three or four teams you would think who can win the Super Bowl are matching up Sunday night. We're talking to Collar about that, so check out purpleinsider.football.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave, do we believe Matthew Collar knows the group singing this song?
No, I believe he does not.
I'm going to go yes. I'm going yes. Matthew Collar, who is singing this boffo hit from, what, 2 years ago, maybe?
3 years ago. 3 years or 4 years ago now.
Oh, right? Really? That long? Okay, who's singing this, Matthew?
I don't have any idea.
BTS.
Not a K-pop guy.
K-pop right there. BTS. Do we have the Larry David soundbite somewhere near? Because Colin and I were just texting about a very funny episode. It's just such a great one. This is a very important day for Larry David. This came from a very early episode. I think maybe a couple years ago. This is Larry having an interaction with a woman he knows at the health club. She's also pregnant. Larry's been lecturing her a little bit that maybe she shouldn't be working out this long in the pregnancy. And also, this takes place.
Happy New Year.
It's a little late, frankly, for the Happy New Year's, you know?
Why? Just happened a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, that's too long. Statute of limitations is kind of run out on the New Year's. 3 days. Plenty.
3 days.
By the way, everything doesn't have to be happy. Why does everything have to be happy?
All right, we'll jump in right there. First of all, we all should agree. Everything doesn't have to be happy. I'm with you. I believe this is the cutoff day, caller. After today, like tomorrow, when you're out and about, meeting the public, you call them the rabble. Dave and I call them the public. No one should be allowed to say a Happy New Year to you on January 4th. January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, that's it. That's the cutoff. Do you agree?
100% agree with Larry David. I can't say I totally agree with all of Larry's similar stances throughout the show, but although him about the guy who, you know, parks sideways and, you know, that yes. kind of thing where he confronts yes. him in the ice cream shop, that I also agreed with.
100%.
But I think that after that, even if you haven't seen somebody in a while, figure out something else to greet them with. You gotta move on.
Thank you. How do we try to quantify the impact of having the number one seed, the week break, you're 15-2, you're not playing every game until you're the Super Bowl at home versus, boom, who knows, maybe Saturday middle of the day, you're the fifth seed and you might be playing a pretty good Tampa Bay Bucks team. It is an enormous difference, right, between these two teams. I'm not saying the loser should just go to the corner and assume the fetal position, but there is just a stunning difference in what the winner and loser will face over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you tried to put like an analytic type of let's break this down from a mathematical perspective, so many teams that get this bye week in history end up going to the Super Bowl, and not very many teams that have to fight their way from the 5, 6, or 7 ever end up appearing there. And I think that when you get that week off, it's just like winning a playoff game and you don't do anything and the other team has to battle their butts off and then come to your place. But whatever that number would say, it's different even for the Minnesota Vikings because of US Bank Stadium. There are very few stadiums that have a serious impact on what offenses do, and US Bank is one of them because of the way Brian Flores plays. It requires offensive lines and quarterbacks to sort through all sorts of different looks and changes and communicate extremely well, which is very hard to do when that place is at the same noise level as a rock concert or a jet engine going off or whatever TV broadcasts like to make that comparison when they show the decibel levels. But it's really been through the roof in the last few games. I think you saw it a little bit from Jordan Love trying to work some of that out early in the game and just struggling. And even if now Goff has been incredible at it, so if you're facing Goff in a couple weeks again, maybe that factor isn't so much. But the other part is, too, they have a veteran team. A lot of guys are playing more snaps than they ever had in their careers this year. Guys like Jonathan Grenard, guys like Andrew Van Ginkle, they would love to have a week off, get to 100%, come out at full speed when they face another team that's banged up. I think we saw it when the Vikings went to San Francisco in 2019. By the second quarter of that game, the Vikings looked like they were worn the heck out after playing the New Orleans Saints the week before, whereas the 49ers looked quite spry. So I think that's and health just in general in football is such a huge deal. It's one of the main reasons the Vikings are here. And if they can go an entire week without losing any players and only get healthier, it's a massive advantage. I would say probably 50-50 shot to make the Super Bowl, if not a little bit better, if they get the week off.
Yep.
Maybe 20% if they don't. It's just so much longer of a road.
Let's say they lose. Who do they want to avoid next weekend?
The most likely team that they're going to play is the team they want to avoid, which is the Los Angeles Rams. I think are the easy answer here, and it's the right one. The Tampa Bay Bucs are a good team. They're also kind of wild when it comes to Baker turning the ball over, and also their defense is not all that impressive. But you've already seen this team lose to Los Angeles, and they have a quarterback who's won the Super Bowl. They have a coach who knows everything KOC knows because he taught him a lot of stuff when he was out there as the offensive coordinator. You have a defensive line that's dominant, that has good interior players, great pass rush, and you have a team that has some players in their leadership that are experienced, especially Matthew Stafford, but also Cooper Kupp, in going to the Super Bowl and winning it. I mean, that's just a very tough ask. Plus, it would be, you know, playing out there. Yeah, that is a long trip. That is a significant trip, and you're not taking over that stadium when it comes to the playoffs. All of a sudden, all those Rams fans who've been hiding out in L.A. Will spot themselves a very expensive big-ticket opportunity, and they'll go out there. So I think that they're the last team you want to face. It's not that they couldn't beat them, but if you got to go play a physical, difficult Rams team and then go back to Ford Field after that, wow, that's a really hard road to go to the Super Bowl.
Last thing, and again, Matthew Collar's with us. Check out all his great work, purpleinsider.football. Dan Campbell's known for many things, but one of his calling cards is, hey, it's fourth down, and what is it, about 50% of the time, seemingly, he's going for it. It's not that high, but he goes for it a lot. You're a guy who likes aggressive football. You believe the analytics favorite. How often when you're watching the Lions and when you're studying the Lions, do you believe Campbell is making the right decisions on the pursuit of a high number of fourth down attempts?
Yeah, they are 20 for 29 this year.
That's
on those
crazy.
Fourth down.
That's
attempts.
Amazing.
I mean, well, a major part of it is that third down, they have the shortest yards to go on average on third down.
Yep.
So if you get to third and six or less, get 3-4 yards, you got a lot of opportunities to go for it. I think that Dan Campbell is right way, way, way more than he is wrong when it comes to going for it. And part of the reason is because even if they fail, he knows the next drive that offense has got a great chance to score. And I mean, at some point, you know, if they make a mistake on one, everyone's going to say, oh, Dan Campbell, he did the wrong thing, because that's how it works in football. They are the number one scoring team in the entire NFL, and a pretty big reason is the aggressiveness that they deploy and the personnel they have are so hard to stop on four straight downs. But it's a major factor, and the players talked about it this week out here, that you really got to be ready on third down. Don't be celebrating too much, because you're going to have to run right back to the line of scrimmage. So they are ready as soon as they cross the 50-yard line that they're going to have to defend four downs. But here's the other key stat. The Minnesota Vikings, number one in the NFL this year at stopping opposing teams on fourth down. Probably the first time I've ever said about a football game that fourth down is a major factor.
Yes.
Probably also I would add trick plays to that. Trick plays could be a factor as well. But that it only adds to the juice of this football game, which is through the roof all week.
It's going to be great. All right, man. Enjoy it. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next week.
Happy New Year to you as well. And thank you very much. We'll talk to you then.
That's it. No more Happy New Year's. We'll probably bring the debate up with Major. He's next on CCO. The tough thing is, he said all of those comments last week. I mean, if you missed him last week, all of those. Just in a, I think it was, Dave, here's my final message to you losers in the Midwest.
Yeah, Happy New Year, jerks.
Here's what I've done just recently. You know? All right, let's jump in. This was a very good day for Mike Johnson, right? I mean, people did not know where this might go, how long it might go. It was a protracted first ballot. It had an intermission. I don't know if we had popcorn, but he ended up getting two to switch their vote back for him. So on one ballot, Mike Johnson, once again, is the Speaker of the House.
Yes. It was imperative for Speaker Johnson and his team to do this on the first ballot. It was imperative for President-elect Trump to have it done on the first ballot. Neither had any interest, nor would essentially tolerate division, chaos, and anything that would appear to suggest the incoming Trump administration would have trouble in the House of Representatives. Now, to be clear, electing a speaker in the House of Representatives is the legislative and political equivalent of tying your shoes.
Yes.
Okay?
Right. It used to be, at least. Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I mean, and that's not a partisan statement.
No. Right. Just wasn't automatic.
Majority, the House majority, Democrat or Republican, must elect a speaker because it can't swear in any members for the new Congress until there is a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't pass a rules package to determine how legislation of any kind will be considered on the House floor without a rules package. You can have a rules package without members sworn in. You can have members sworn in without electing a speaker. So it is the first, most basic, simplest, historically, obligation of a new Congress, elect a speaker. That it was visited with an hour and 35 minutes of drama gives you an insight into the difficulties this very narrow, historically narrow, House Republican majority will face. But they got through it. And getting through it is better than not getting through it. And President-elect Trump, even after putting out Truth Social posts about this, making his advocacy for Mike Johnson fundamentally clear, still had to pick up the phone and call members during this hour and 35 minutes where the fate of the Speaker and the House Republican majority and the Trump agenda hung in the balance. So that gives you a pretty good insight into the kind of hands-on approach this president, once he becomes president on January 20th, is going to have to deal with a restive and still not completely unified House Republican majority.
We knew for a while that Thomas Massie was going to vote against Mike Johnson. We knew there were others who might vote present. Who knows what they might do? We had a few who just wouldn't vote the first time their name was read. But we had two other representatives, Keith Self and Ralph Norman, who voted for individuals outside of Johnson and then eventually flipped their votes for Johnson. Yep. Did they get something in return?
To be determined. They went to the cloakroom and huddled with now Speaker Johnson, Dusty Johnson, who is a member from South Dakota.
Yep.
A frequent emissary between warring factions of the House Republican Conference. He is a kind of political glue within the House Republican Conference. He has good relationships across all the ideological Trumpian, non-Trumpian sides, and is an honest broker. He was talking to Ralph Norman. He was talking to Keith Self. Thomas Massie was not talked to. Nobody talked to Thomas Massie because they knew he was unreachable. Went to the cloakroom. When you're in the cloakroom and you're having face-to-face conversations, things typically are exchanged. Before this vote, Speaker Johnson, presumptive, said there would be no quid pro quo. He was not going to trade anything to anyone in particular to get their vote. We'll see if that held.
Fellow journalist Matt Gaetz, a peer of yours, colleague of yours, lover of Botox like you, there was some murmurs that he might actually show
up. Wait a minute. Matt Gaetz's experience with Botox is much more than an act of youthful exuberance.
Oh, my God. He looks like Wayne Newton now.
It's a kind of obsessionary devotion. Yeah.
Matt, just back away a little, right? I mean, who doesn't want to look younger? I can't fault you, but I don't know. 20 shots might be a bit much. That's just me.
And you don't need to apply it with an iron.
Yes, that's probably one that's been turned on to turbo hot.
Yes.
You know, let's just avoid it. Did anybody think he really was going to show up today and try to vote?
No one did. That was built into the expectation. So that meant the effective House Republican present majority was 219. Meaning if you lost two votes, that takes you to 217. That was not enough. You needed 218 so you could have, meaning Speaker Johnson could have one holdout. Thomas Massie identified himself as that and would tackle anyone who was not quite clear on that point. He wants to make sure everyone knows he's an iconoclast, and that's putting it diplomatically. He's just not in on the Johnson approach to leadership or the entire House Republican leadership team, so he was always out. The other two were a bit of a surprise. Many of the other members of Congress that we were watching who held out the first time didn't vote, just didn't say present, didn't say anything, just let the vote pass them by, all came around to Johnson. And that indicates to me that they were waiting to see how big the anti-Johnson vote was going to be, not including them. Then it was large enough to make it clear that Johnson couldn't get the speakership unless they all came back. And even then, it wasn't going to be enough, but they all came back. They all got back in the fold. That exerted more pressure on Keith Self and Ralph Norman. And after phone calls with President-elect Trump, they came around too.
Let's talk about the president-elect. Since the election, he's been fairly behind the scenes, right? Tweets, a press conference where, hey, nice to see you. You're looking good. I mean, it's kind of a little more measured Donald Trump. And I start thinking, well, could he be slightly different Donald Trump? And then we have the tragedy in New Orleans, which was an act of terror. This was a terrorist act where a man who was a member of the U.S. Army mowed down and murdered 14 individuals and was killed after he removed himself from his rented vehicle. And Donald Trump, who won his nomination in 16 by staking out his position on the board on immigration over his Republican opponents, and it played a key part in 16, and it played an enormous part in 24. Let's just be honest. President-elect is lying about the connection between the border and a U.S.-born citizen. And again, you can have two things, Major. You can have criticism at Joe Biden and the border, which I think is just and apt and appropriate. But you also can tell the truth about a murderer who killed 14 who was born here, and the president-elect is not doing that.
Yeah, and you have to ask yourself, why? Well, I think this country better brace itself for a declaration on January 20th or the day thereafter of a national emergency and the invocation of pronounced federal powers in terms of immigration. That's coming, ladies and gentlemen. And don't kid yourself that it's not. And lying about this for a certain segment of the Trump fan base makes it seem all the more necessary. Okay? This was a premeditated decision to amplify concerns about immigration in anticipation of taking office and declaring a national emergency and investing the federal government in national emergency powers previously not exercised in this sphere, declaring a state of war, possibly, because of an invasion, etc. We don't know what the exact language is going to be, but I'm telling you, brace yourself. And rhetoric like this about the episode, the tragedy, the homicidal maniac in New Orleans is not an accident.
No, it's not. I agree with you 1,000%. We still have a president. We don't see him much. He was available today, and he was awarding 20 individuals the President's Citizens Medal, including to Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney. Okay, we can't even make this up. We believe that you have control of this because this open of yours, Dave Harrigan, how often a week does the Major Garrett open fire?
That's three times this week, twice today.
We believe you have a button somewhere in the mansion in Virginia. It's near the moat. It's near the security that, you know, Jeeves hits it for your amusement. It's amazing. So we'll see if I can get this statement out without the open firing again. What do you think about how Joe Biden included Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney, the chairs of the January 6th committee for the President's Citizens Medal, clearly sending a message?
Of course he's sending a message. And the larger question will be, will he issue preemptive pardons? I don't think either of them want them. I don't think either of them believe they need them. And I think they believe if they were charged by a Trump Justice Department, they would eagerly fight those charges in court. So this is a way of signaling, I appreciate your actions. I appreciate your leadership, what you did to bring facts to the American public, which the January 6th committee did. Those were viewed in a political context, and President Trump asked the country to sort that out, at least in part, in the election. And he got the result he wanted to. He denounced that immediately, continues again to lie that the January 6th committee destroyed evidence, didn't destroy evidence, talked about Speaker Pelosi. That's been debated. All of it is now part of a January 6th story that will have another chapter. And that next chapter to come will be on January 20th or January 21st or January 22nd of this year when, mark my words, then President Trump, no longer president-elect, will issue pardons. How widespread they are for January 6th convicts, meaning people convicted by a jury or who pled guilty, and for what offenses, we will find out. There are plenty of those who expect complete pardons of everyone, even the most violent offenders.
Wouldn't shock me.
See how aggressive he is on that.
Yeah, would not shock.
But that's the next phase of this conversation. And the next application of what is the rule of law.
Yeah, a very fair question. Is there anything outside of Biden and those future long-term Hunter Biden-like pardons? Are you expecting anything else dramatic from Biden over the last couple weeks?
Well, he's going to go to New Orleans on Monday. And it's been interesting in the last couple of days. The president has spoken about this, and both times he has spoken about it, he has added new information. He's taken FBI briefings and been the first to convey them to the American public. The first time he did that, telling everyone, which we did not know previously, that the suspect killed on site after ramming his electric vehicle truck through the crowd on Bourbon Street had recorded videos. That was an FBI briefing to the president. He said that in his prepared remarks, letting the country know that for the first time. Yesterday in remarks, he said that there were detonator devices in the possession of that same assailant for the improvised explosive devices, the pipe bombs that he himself set in other parts of Bourbon Street. So I found it very interesting that President Biden, re-engaging on the public stage in ways he hasn't in recent weeks, not only did so in the traditional role of consoler-in-chief, but also conveyed new information to try to perhaps recontextualize the sense that he has been basically out to lunch since November 5th.
For the final time, you will hear it from me until next year, because 3 days is the limit. Happy New Year. It is the limit. You agree. I know you do.
I will defer to your leadership on this important matter.
I appreciate that. Is that only on this one or going forward?
Only on this one.
I thought so. I was really hoping it wouldn't be. Thank you, Major Garrett, with us. Can we squeeze in a little bit of Am I Wrong when we come back?
I have to talk to the committee. They're not happy.
Let's see what the committee has to say. All right, let's go. Let's squeeze in two quick Am I Wrongs. Committee not happy. Suck it up, committee. Okay.
Well, I spoke to the committee during the break, and let's just say they're agreeing to do this, not for you, for the people.
Oh, I thought maybe for Jason.
No. Well, Jason's one of the people.
Well, the committee, I had a lively conversation with the committee while the voting was open.
Yeah.
And then they made the right choice.
You influenced like
they made the right choice.
Yeah, okay.
I am the Trump of this station.
You are. Anyways.
Let's talk about an item in the news. Apple settling a class action lawsuit from back in 2019 alleging that Apple employees could hear sensitive information accidentally, air quotes, recorded by Siri. Medical information, perhaps criminal activity, sexual encounters.
Mm, you looked right at Jason.
Oh, yeah. And that settlement costs Apple $95 million.
Oh, I bet devastated.
Amounting to about $20 per each Siri-connected device, if you happen to be a part of that class action lawsuit. And as Reuters pointed out, $95 million equal to about 9 hours of profit for the good people at the Apple Corporation. That is a ridiculous, ridiculous and amazing light slap on the wrist.
Am I wrong?
They're listening, though, right?
Hey, Siri, is Dave Harrigan wrong? Sorry.
No comment.
Siri doesn't understand.
It's like a coach. I don't want to talk.
One of the many that I've just left without words.
Yes. Speechless.
Yes.
Another female is mesmerized.
You are not
in your presence. Yeah. The phone is listening to you when you're not using it. I believe that 100%. Don't you?
100%.
You believe that, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't care. Go ahead.
I want you to hear it all.
Yeah. My voice deserves to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad.
As Joe Freeberg said on the show, 5 years ago, we've lost privacy. You just have to understand.
Yeah. Yep.
Boom. Let's go to another one. Went quick.
That was very good. Very good. Well done. Just agree with me. It makes everything go quicker.
Yeah. Well, this was like the most lukewarm take ever. I mean, what's your take? Like, company is bad?
How much should it have been? 500 trillion?
Keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
Now
okay.
I could say you're wrong.
Yep.
Next.
Lukewarm takes are what this segment's all about.
Very mild.
Lukewarm. Good Lord.
Let's go with another lukewarm take, shall we?
Children are sweet.
No. That's
charity. Am I wrong? Golly.
The greatest annoyance of the holiday season, without a doubt, is wrapping paper. And I think we need to step up to big wrapping paper.
Yep.
That's enough. We don't need it. We don't need to spend hours wrapping gifts throw it all away in 18 different trash bags that are sitting by the curb.
I assume Tim Walz and Gwen are going to give us another video breaking down what we should do with our wrapping paper.
Stand up to big wrapping paper. Here's the new rules. Okay. Anyone younger than 2 or older than 12, you don't get your gift wrapped. Throw it behind a door, put a blanket on it, just hand it to them. I don't care.
Am I wrong?
I'm all for it, by the way. I hate wrapping.
You could not be more wrong. Here's why I love wrapping paper. It is
you don't.
You
have a team.
I love wrapping paper. It is the one time a year you can just consume. You can throw your trash around like a monster, and it's considered part of the fun. It's great. It's great. It's my way of telling the greenies out there to shove it.
So in other words, you like opening the presents. Do you wrap?
I do wrap. I'm the wrapper. Do I know what I'm wrapping? No. We play a fun game on Christmas called Does Dad Know What Presents Are In There?
That's good. Will we play a little game show at 4:05?
Heck yeah. Card to Shark.
Stick around. Jason is next. Happy New Year, everybody.